Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. This is the day of the month that we have set aside to talk about things that grow around the home landscape. And we do these programs starting in the spring through the summer into the fall with Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And she's here to try to help you out, to answer your questions. If you're thinking about what you'd like to plant this year, or you know that you had some problem last year and you want to try to head it off, any kind of advice on dealing with things like trees and shrubs, flowering plants, things that you might plant in your garden that you might want to eat. We can also talk about houseplants, any and all of those sorts of things. All you have to do is call us. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line. That's good. Anywhere that you can hear us, that's 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Well, it's nice to have you back.
Good morning.
Now, it is officially spring. We're in April. Sooner or later, it's going to get nice. And things outside, at least in my yard, things do seem to be going along.
Right.
It has been kind of the late winter, early spring has definitely been on the cool side. And also maybe that means that we'll have a sort of extended cool spring. A wishful thinking on his part.
If you can work that out, let me know.
I don't know. I'm afraid that what's going to happen is we're just going to wake up one day and it's going to be
90.
80.
There you go.
Which is often Illinois. What it happens here. But, you know, we can hope. That we have occasionally had these kind of nice, cool springs that seem to go on longer than they do ordinarily. So, you know, who knows? Anything could happen. Well, we have callers. Well, let's talk to them. We'll start out here with somebody on the campus. Line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hey, I have two questions. First one is I have left my raspberry bushes up for the winter, and I wanted to know if now would be a great time to cut them back or if it should have been done prior to now, blah, 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 right?
Yeah. Are these everbearers or?
Yeah, twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's everbearer, isn't it?
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, actually, what you can do is, and probably this time of year, I probably just go ahead and remove anything that obviously produced the twice last year.
Uh-huh.
And those are, you know, very obvious because they're usually dead, and you kind of just even rock them back and forth, and they pop right off kind of thing. So I would go ahead and remove those at this point.
Now, should you cut them down to ground level?
Yeah, right. You go ahead and just cut them down to ground level.
So at the end of the year, you know, like last year, should I have gone ahead and cut them back to about 6-8 inches above ground or what?
Well, normally with everbearers, what you'll see is they produce on the you know, that same cane, that primal cane actually produces twice. So
right.
The same, that's the reason you get everbearers. So at any rate, it'll actually form its flower buds on the, I guess it's on sort of the middle part of it or so, and those will produce. And then in the spring then, or actually early summer, I guess, then that top part will go ahead and flower. So you actually get it twice like that. Now, what I have seen with some people, just so they don't have to think about which ones to take out and which ones not to take out, sometimes in the fall, people just go ahead and just mow them down.
Right.
And it kind of gives you more of a once a season kind of thing. You don't get quite the long season of bearing, but for a lot of people, it's just a lot easier.
I see.
And so you could certainly do that. So you might just, if you want to just go ahead and sort of forget that really early one, you might just go ahead and just mow them down to the ground in the fall.
Okay. Second question is, how are we doing coming this spring for morels around here?
Boy, I don't know. We need some more rain.
Yeah.
Need some rain.
Okay.
So we'll see. Do you have a good spot?
No.
And would you tell me?
I would offline.
Okay. Well, maybe we should talk later.
Sure. So let me ask about the morel season. Are we best to have cooler temperatures during at night and warmer during the day and more rain?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly about the temperature. I don't consider myself a morel expert by any means, but I do know how to eat a good morel. So I'm an expert in that way. But generally we like, you know, the moisture and it's a certain amount, I guess sort of moderate temperatures and bright sunny days.
Okay.
Kind of sort of brings them out. But certainly we need some more moisture here. We really haven't had much rain, so.
Okay. Well, thanks. I appreciate your time.
Good luck.
Thank you. We'll go to Philo for the next person here, line number two. Hello.
Yes. What we're going to do, we're going to be moving on the mid-April, And what, over the years in our present location, we've had some trees that we've planted to kind of special occasions, like for the children's birth dates and things like this. And we're interested in maybe taking some of that trees to their new location. I wonder if you could tell me how or who to contact where we could get offshoots off these trees and get them replanted at our new location.
Mm-hmm. So you're actually talking about taking cuttings of them, or you actually want to remove the
tree, a cutting off of them? Like, we got a couple of oaks and some lilacs and pine trees and stuff that were planted when at the birth of the children and stuff like that.
Right. So you're not trying to take the whole thing, just pieces of the whole thing. Yeah, it kind of depends on what trees, because you may find that some of them are actually might be easier from seed, believe it or not. Certainly the oaks, you know, it's real easy to gather acorns and, you know, start them. So obviously, okay. You know, it takes a while, but even from a cutting, it's going to take a while.
What would you do with lilacs?
Lilacs, actually, often you can, if you know those little suckers that come up from the ground, often you can go ahead and just dig those up, and they'll have enough of root on them that they'll go ahead and you can just start them that way. Or actually, those will probably work fairly well from cuttings. Probably on any of this propagation stuff, because, you know, it varies from plant to plant and when you take the cutting and all those kinds of things. So probably what you really need to do is get a good book. Usually the library probably could have a good book, or if you could give us, you can call us down at the extension office. We'll be glad to sort of talk you through it, but figure out which trees, whether you have a white oak or red oak, or we can sort of figure that out. Pardon?
Contact you at the extension office.
Right, and it's 217-333-7672. Okay. And we had some plant propagation books there, but you could also check with the library and see what needs to be done with each one.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. And to Lake Bloomington, line number 4. Hello.
Hi there. Mm-hmm. I'm calling about my bougainvillea. I have 4 of them in my sunroom, and they are dying. They're quite unwell.
So do you know they're just dropping their leaves, turning yellow and dropping leaves? Or?
They begin by, they put out new leaves or new blooms, and they just kind of shrivel. They just, they never, you know, look right. If they do bloom, it's a strange blossom. It's not the regular blossom.
As in kind of distorted and kind of funny looking?
Yeah. Or just as if they didn't fully open.
Well, I guess a couple of things I probably look for is I'm not sure of any viruses that bougainvillea can get, but that certainly can cause distortion of growth and sometimes even discoloration. You get this kind of yellow mottling and that kind of thing. And I'm not aware of viruses in bougainvilleas, but the viruses certainly infect a lot of different plants. And unfortunately, with viruses, there really isn't too much you can do. It's within the plant. There really isn't too much you can do about it.
Systemic poison?
Pardon?
You know, the systemic poison.
Right, but that wouldn't touch a virus.
Not getting help a virus.
No, it wouldn't touch a virus. But I would also think about maybe some other things that are going on. So I'd really look them over and see if you're not actually having some insect problems somewhere along the line.
I certainly looked for bugs and can't find any.
Right. I would think about thrips, for one thing. And I don't know if you're familiar with thrips, but they often will feed on the very young growth, often on the flowers. And they're very difficult to see, but usually if you just take the flower and sort of pull it apart a little bit and then blow on it, then they'll move.
Oh.
And they're kind of cigar-shaped, but they're little. But once they move, then you'll see them. And that would be one thing, because that certainly can cause distortion of the new growth. And
what do they respond to? I mean, how can I get rid of them?
Well, then you'd have to think about some of the systemic type. Usually the systemic type insecticides would often be used for something along those lines. So, but I'd really check them over and make sure you're not having some insect problems, and, you know, look and make sure that you're not getting some disease problems in there, because certainly those kinds of things can start showing up on plants.
Spread from one to another, which suggests insects, doesn't it?
Right, it sure does. Sure does. So I would really look them over and see if that's not what the problem is. But thrips would be my first thought.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
Good luck.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. We have as our guest here this morning on Focus 580, Sandy Mason from the U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here on the program every month, and the spring and summer, and we do this into the fall, to give you the chance to ask questions about things that grow in and around the home landscape. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Are we at a time now where people can start, if they're into their lawns, where they can start thinking about applications of fertilizer and or weed control?
Mm-hmm. Well, with fertilizer, normally we actually recommend, although you'll see other recommendations with companies and such, but the University of Illinois generally recommends that you wait actually to around the 1st of May, end of April, 1st of May. And they really have found that it's better to wait. We seem to have less leaf disease problems, that kind of thing. But it's also important to do a late fall application, and that late fall application then would really help with your early green up, which is what people are trying to do when they fertilize now. So really sort of get on a sort of rotation like that, where you're actually doing a late fall fertilization and then waiting for your spring application until April or May. And as far as weed control, this certainly would be a time for weed control. You kind of have to figure out what kind of weeds you have. If you have had problems with crabgrass, this would be a time to start thinking about that. Normally, we'd like to have the crabgrass control on usually by mid-April. You're usually in pretty good shape here in central Illinois. So that might be something to sort of think about and really evaluate whether you've had crabgrass problems. But, you know, I guess the whole thing with the weeds is you really have to, you know, figure out, you know, the weeds come in into those areas where it's open. You know, there's no grass growing there. It's got, you know, a heavy, you know, a dense stand of grass isn't going to allow a whole lot of weeds to come in. So you kind of have to figure out what's going on here. Why am I getting these open areas in the grass and then the weeds are coming in? So if you can sort of think about your maintenance programs and try to invigorate the lawn so you don't have those open areas and not just strictly rely on herbicides all the time, in the long run, you'll be much better off. So really kind of think about those things, because this would be the time we're actually going to start seeing. I noticed there's a little veronica that's blooming right now that people might see, a little blue flower. We're also going to see, soon we're going to see henbit, which a lot of people confuse that with creeping Charlie. That's going to be blooming here very soon. So there are some very early weeds that are going to start popping up soon. So people may want to think about control on those simply because they are annuals. They're going to come back every year from seed. And so you need to take care of them before they set that seed for next year.
And if you're thinking about there are some areas where you want to try to put out some seed and maybe get some new grass started, is this too early?
No, actually, April is not bad. Normally, it's a little warmer this time of year, but normally April is usually a pretty good month to go ahead and start thinking about reseeding your lawn. Of course, you know, keep in mind that you're not going to want to use your crabgrass preventer the same time you're going to be doing any seeding. So you have to decide on which route you want to go, whether you want to worry about crabgrass or you want to thicken up the lawn. And I think a lot of times, actually, if people would sort of think about thickening up the lawn, adding some good grass seed, there are some these slit seeder machines that you can actually rent. It actually helped to put the seed down into the soil. That's always real important if you're actually sort of helping to thicken up a lawn. And I think a lot of times if people sort of think along those lines, they might find that they actually have less weed problems by helping to sort of thicken the lawn.
Okay. We have some other callers here. Let's talk with somebody in Arcola. They're up next, line number one. Hello.
Yes, I know this is just a little bit off of not off of the subject, but it is anything that grows in around the house. And in the yard, we have a squirrel. And the squirrel has entered the house siding.
Wow.
And I didn't know whether there was any thing that you've ever dealt with. It is in and around the house.
Yeah. So he's actually, I assume you have like cedar siding or something like that, and he's chewing on the...
Actually, no. We evidently closed him in, and he chewed through the vinyl siding.
Oh well, you can't blame him for that, though.
Well, but now
I would too.
Decide whether he's going to be in or out, or
so he's going back in.
Well, we've put the paper up over the hole, and there appears to be activity. And so he's going in and out, and I didn't know if you knew the particular habits of, you know, when they feed or when they...
Well, the worst thing, you know, this time of year is young,
right.
They've actually produced any young, which certainly...
That's probably what it's thinking about.
Yeah. So you really need to figure out what's going on in there, whether they've actually...
Do we take the whole side of the house off?
There's no way to see in there or to see what's going on, or I'm having a hard time visualizing. So he's getting sort of behind the vinyl siding and then going somewhere?
Yeah, it's going in between the walls and the wall and the outside.
Wow. I'm not sure. I'd really have to check on when they actually produce young, but this would certainly be, you know, we're getting close here, if not already.
Right.
So that would be one of the big concerns, because obviously you don't want to close up the hole if there's any young in there.
Right.
So probably what I would try doing is calling your local animal control and see if they can give you some pointers on that. And then if they tell you that more than likely there isn't any young in there, then I would, as soon as you can, get that, you know, get the hole repaired.
Well, who is the local animal control here?
You're here in Champaign County, I assume? Or?
No, we're in Arcola, Douglas County.
Yeah, I would just check under your city government. And normally, or county government, I'm sorry, it's normally under the county government, and it'll tell you who the animal control person is.
All righty.
Or group. But, yeah, I check with them. Boy, that's interesting problem.
Well, it is in and around the house.
Yeah, it's certainly in and around the house. You're absolutely right. But, yeah, you may have to, you know, wait until they've already, until they're young or up and out. So, I don't know. That's going to be a tough one.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Let's go to Mansfield for another caller. Line 4. Hello.
Oh, hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about foundation plantings. It seems like many people use evergreens, but I would like to try something else. And I have the north of the house is already taken care of, and so is the south, but it's the east and west foundation plantings. And I was thinking of red twig dogwoods, but someone said that they need full sun. So the east of the house only gets, you know, the full morning sun, and, of course, the west gets the afternoon. Is it possible to use red twig dogwoods for that, for foundation plantings?
I don't think you can hardly kill red twig dogwoods, to tell you the truth. You know, they're really tough plants, and you can put them in some shade. I think that's fine. Okay. The one thing I would be a little bit concerned about is how tall they're going to get. You know,
I'm thinking of maybe the dwarf variety.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I definitely stick with the dwarf varieties.
Okay, but I thought
by far.
They were very sensitive little things.
Oh, no. Oh, gosh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
No, you won't have any problem with them. And I assume even on the east or west, they're getting at least some sun.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Then I really wouldn't worry about them too much. But it really is the height thing that I'd probably be most concerned about. But if you get one of the compact ones, you should be okay.
And how about, are there any small trees? Sometimes I see it looks like, is it a little lacy-leafed maple that people use for planting? Do you know what the name of that is?
Yeah, Japanese maples. And there's hundreds of cultivars of Japanese maples. I mean, they're very beautiful.
And they're small enough to be near the foundation? Or?
They're very small, and they grow very slowly.
Oh, okay.
But you really have to look and see which cultivar you get. There's certainly some of them that are a little taller than others. And even with those, I wouldn't stick them right next to the foundation. I'd still probably bring them out, you know, at least 10 feet or so. I really wouldn't stick them right next to the foundation. I probably wouldn't consider them exactly foundation plantings, but you could use them within a foundation bed kind of thing, and that would work out just fine.
Well, thanks so much for your help.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Urbana here for the next person. Line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I was wondering if you can tell me how you make daffodils bloom. I had some daffodils a few years back, and the first year I had 24 bulbs and I had 24 blooms. The next year I had about 12, and ever since then I've only had like maybe 3 or 4 blooms. And what do you need to do to get daffodils to bloom?
Yeah, I think
to dig them up. Or?
Yeah, you might. It's kind of surprising that they would actually, you know, dwindle that fast, but it's certainly possible. I think I would think about dividing them because that's usually what happens. Is if they, because you know they produce more bulbs. You know, when they're down there, they split and they produce more bulbs. And so sometimes they can really get pretty jam packed in there. It usually takes about 3 to 5 years before that really happens. So yours happened a little bit faster than what we might think. But if you had really big bulbs and you put them fairly close together, it could certainly happen. So I think I would dig them up and divide them. And then, you know, move them around within the landscape. I would wait until after they bloom, whatever blooms you're going to get this year. But I think I would probably wait until after they bloom and then do it then.
So after they bloom, do you wait for the greenery to die back to yellow, or can you do them right after they bloom?
You know, ideally, and what we always used to say that, oh, you had to wait until October and you had to do all these things. But, you know, I found out that I really think they're a lot tougher than we give them credit. And I certainly have moved tulips and daffodils and all those other things while they still have green foliage. Ideally, you know, it'd be wonderful if you could wait till October or at least wait until the foliage dies down naturally. I think that's good. But, you know, sometimes our schedules just don't work out quite that way. So ideally, it'd be nice to wait. If you just feel like that's probably not going to be doable and you really have more time earlier in the spring, I think they do just fine, to tell you the truth, even done when they have green foliage. But I would leave the green foliage on them. You know, you transplant them with the green foliage and then plant them back, and they still seem to do just fine.
Well, another question. You hear about daffodils naturalizing. Mm-hmm. Does that mean they spread by themselves?
Right.
Well, I guess I'm wondering, what makes them naturalized, but they don't even bloom for me. So,
well, I would also think about a few other things. You know, you might want to, I don't know if you fertilize them at all, you might think about fertilizing them to sort of encourage them to get established, those kinds of things. Are they getting full sun when they in the spring?
Let's see. There is a lot. Yeah, I guess they do. Mm-hmm. Half a day sun.
You know, they like that full sun, at least early in the spring when they're first getting going. That's important. And they don't like soils that are particularly wet. Mm-hmm. That might be another thing. If there's poor drainage, they don't like those kind of things. And actually, some cultivars actually will naturalize much better than others.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them actually have, it seems like some of the more expensive ones don't seem to want to naturalize quite like some of the older ones. But so if you really want something that will naturalize, I would really look in the catalogs and it'll say great for naturalizing or something that'll tell you that
they work well
in that situation.
So they make, do they spread by seed or by making more bulbs?
They're making more bulbs for the most part.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you.
All mm-hmm. right, very good. Let's go on here. Champagne, line number 3. Hello.
Hello, I have two questions on indoor plants, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
I have three amaryllis, but I've had them for a number of years, and they get these little shoots on each of the sides, you know. And I've got one is a bulb, and it's got three little things on each side. Should I break those off and start those again, or? They don't have any flowers. The main bulb
right.
have a flower, but the other ones don't.
Right, right. And you can certainly take those off and start. And it'll probably be several years before those ever flower, but eventually they will.
Oh,
so sure.
So it would be safe and it wouldn't hurt the main bulb.
No, right.
You just break
right.
it off?
Right, you just kind of pull it off. They actually kind of pop off.
Do they? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing I have, a question I have is about African violets. These African violets get this long stem, tubular thing, you know?
Yeah.
And then you have the plant. When I repot them, should I put all of that stem underground or what?
Yeah, usually that's not a problem, just to go ahead and bury them a little bit. I wouldn't do a whole lot with that. I mean, I don't know how big your stem is. You might actually, if it's really getting long, which I have seen some of them do, I think probably I would start thinking about taking cuttings and starting a new plant.
Okay.
Rather than just burying the whole thing, because you can always get some stem rot problems if you bury it too much.
Uh-huh.
So I think I would, you might even do a little of both, but if it's really, you know, if you're just burying it an inch or so, it's not a problem. But if you really start burying it, then...
Yeah.
I would think about some new plants.
Yeah, and the stem gets a couple inches long.
Yeah, yeah. And so sometimes it's just time to start just taking some cuttings and start all over again.
Okay, and when you have, you know, a plant that has a couple of plants on it, this African violet, do you just pull those off?
Yeah, you ought to divide them. Uh-huh.
Okay. Thank you very
uh-huh.
much.
All right, thanks for the call. You know, just not very long ago, back in the winter, I saw this magazine article about the fact that you can take clippings from woody plants, things that flower, and you can bring them inside and you can force them and you can get them
mm-hmm.
to bloom.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to try this, and I clipped a few branches off of some forsythia that we have, and I brought them inside, and dang it, they bloomed. This is the coolest
figure.
Thing I ever saw. It was so nice because, you know, you have this little bit of spring mm-hmm. color inside, these nice yellow blooms, and the ones outside, they're just sitting there. You know, they're not doing anything. So I'm thinking, hey, now this is darn cool. What are there other things? Are there some other things that will do that?
Yeah. Actually, any of the spring flowering things you can do that with, whether it's actually you can even do it with lilacs. It takes a little bit longer for them to go ahead and develop. And the closer they are to their regular bloom time, the more successful you are. So if you can get them so they're, you know, a few weeks away, it always works out a little bit better. But at any rate, I've seen people do it with dogwoods even, some of the, you know, flowering dogwoods tree. Red buds are good for that.
Well, one of the things I wondered
yeah.
about whether red
probably,
bud would do
probably for Scythia and red bud are probably the more successful ones. It seems like the ones with a little bit more elaborate flowers, like the lilacs and stuff, have a tendency to dry out a little bit too much, and sometimes you don't have quite the success with those. But it's really is fun. You can if you're out there trimming your apple trees or, you know, cherry trees or anything else you have, you can bring those in, and those will go ahead and flower. So kind of take in your trimmings.
That was just, I thought, this is the
coolest thing. And it actually worked.
I was surprised. Well, I went and I tried to choose some branches that seemed like they had pretty good buds
on
them.
Yeah, that is the one thing you have to look for.
And that it said that then what you needed to do was keep it in a cool place. Mm-hmm. So I dutifully took it and put it down in my basement and kind of forgot about it. And then I was downstairs in the basement doing laundry and look up and think, Well, look at that.
Was it blooming in the basement?
It was blooming in the basement. And I thought, now, dang, that is the coolest thing. So I'd have to say thank you, Martha Stewart.
Oh, no.
Yes. Marthy. She was the one who told me about that. So try that at your house if you have some of those things. It was pretty cool. We're about the midpoint here of the program with Sandy Mason. We have another caller we'll get to in just a second. However, first, we need to do this. This is a test of the emergency alert system. And this is AM 580 WILL Urbana. This is Focus 580, our telephone talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're doing this morning, our monthly show on lawn and garden care. Sandy Mason is here from U of I Extension in Champaign County. If you have questions about things, growing things, can be houseplants, but also things that grow in the home landscape. So we're talking about trees and shrubs and flowering plants and so forth. You can give us a call. 333. And squirrels. They grow. Yeah, they grow in the home landscape. They can
Sorry,
be in the home.
To interrupt.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've done various pest kind of issues.
Yeah, that's fine.
And also, of course, things like squirrels and rabbits and deer and those sorts of things can be problems in the garden because they'll eat stuff. So those we'll do our best. 333-WILL. Toll-free 800-222-WILO. In the Chicago area here for the next person, line 4. Hello?
Hello?
Yes?
I have two main questions. Actually, one is partly related to squirrels. I was hoping to plant some sunflowers, you know, the tall ones that would then be along the banister of the patio. And I was told that squirrels will just devour them. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that.
Well, more than likely, yes. you'll get, and even the rabbits. Actually, the rabbits will even trim off the plants as they come up, I've noticed. They seem to like those, too.
So you
might have to think about some repellents. And there certainly are some repellents for rabbits as well as for squirrels. And so if you really think you want to try this, I would probably think about some repellents or keep an eye on them, but...
You mean actually to use some kind of spray on them?
Right, right.
Like a pesticide? Or
well, it's repellents. Normally, it's hot pepper sprays is normally
what
it is.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Okay, that isn't quite as bad. We're having a wedding this summer. It's not going to be in the yard, you know, but there will be a lot of out-of-town visitors. And I don't have a very green thumb. Mostly what I've done in the past, if I wanted a lot of color, is just put a lot of impatience in.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any suggestions about other simple, colorful annuals?
Is this all shade, then?
No, it's mixed sun and shade. A lot of areas get part sun, in other words, half a day, and so it's not like full sun.
Well, I think what you might think about is you might even think about doing some things in containers, things that maybe take a little bit more sun, and then when it's party time, you can just move them around and put them in the shade.
Actually, I already do that. What suggestions do you have for that?
Yeah, I think so. You're getting at least 6 hours of sun, maybe 6 to 8.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're going to do containers, I actually like vinca. You know, that not the vinca vine, but the one that actually, the annual vinca that sort of stands up tall. Boy, that's a tough plant. And if you're, you know, it likes heat. So if this is a fairly early wedding, you may or may not want to use that. But if, you know, you're talking about a summertime plant, you can't really beat those. And they're great for containers because they don't mind the dryness.
September, so actually.
Yeah, so they'd have plenty of time to get going. Yeah. And actually, there's lots of new petunias out there that really look good, not only in a landscape situation, but also in containers.
Uh-huh.
Even the wave, I don't know if you've seen all the wave, purple wave and rose wave and pink wave and all those. Those are wonderful sort of ground cover type petunias.
Uh-huh.
There's a new storm series that's supposed to be really good, the most weather tolerant petunias that are out there supposedly. And so there's lots of new petunias, I think you'll find, that are probably much better landscape plants than maybe what we've had in the past, because they don't need all the pinching and all that stuff. As long as they have good fertility, they actually do quite well and very showy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can't hardly get much showier than that. So you might think about some, you know, really making up some really nice containers, grow them in the sun for the most part, because most of these are going to be sun-loving plants.
Yeah.
And then, you know, party time, then you bring them out.
Because yeah.
we don't have a whole lot of really flashy plants for the shade. Certainly impatiens
right.
are the flashiest.
Yeah.
Begonias to some extent are somewhat flashy, but we just don't have quite the flashy plants in the
yeah.
shadier areas and annuals.
Okay, well, that's very helpful. And mm-hmm. I have noticed that when I've had some vincas, they've been very sturdy mm-hmm. and quite colorful.
And you might even think about, now that I think about in shadier areas, even coleus. There's some wonderful new coleus now that are just beautiful. And, you know, those are sort of instant color. You don't have to wait
yeah.
for them to flower, and you actually don't even want them to flower. And it's, and you can put a whole bunch of them out there and have really pretty splashy show.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. I didn't think that coleus did flower. Are there some coleus that flower?
They actually do flower. We really don't want them to flower. They have this kind of long, spiky thing with these little kind of bluish purple flowers. And the problem is when they start to flower, they kind of get lankier and they're not quite as attractive. And so most of the time people actually pinch those out. But a lot of the newer ones, actually, they've made some selections so those don't flower as quickly. So you actually have a much nicer plant, a much more compact plant. And you know, coleus were one of those that were really popular, you know, so the turn of the not the turn of this last century, but the century before there. They're very, very popular, kind of the Victorian era, and then they sort of fell out of favor. People just sort of, yeah, coleus been around forever. And now I think people have sort of rediscovered how wonderful they are, that, you know, it's instant color, and you can get everything from, you know, reds to deep maroons to yellows to chartreuse, and they're just amazing colors in them. You can see I kind of like coleus.
I guess. We're here at 333-9455. We're Champaign-Urbana folks, toll-free 800-222-9455. Sandy Mason's the guest. You have gardening questions, you can give us a call. Are you have anything going here soon in the way of informational programs?
Actually, we will be having some programs certainly at the Idea Garden. We had one not too long ago. We're kind of waiting on a few things at the Arboretum, so we've kind of pushed those into April. But next time I'm here, I'll talk to you a little bit more about those. I am involved in this Saturday. We're actually having a wildflower hike out at Allerton Park. So if people are interested, you know, that's some of the things that first start popping up are those wonderful wildflowers. So if people are interested in going on a wildflower hike, we're going to do that at 11 o'clock, and they can just meet us at the there's a parking lot that's just south of the main bridge, and people can just meet there at the parking lot and go on a wildflower hike. There's lots of things up right now.
Okay,
so.
Great. Well, we got some other folks to talk with. Next caller's in Oakwood on line one. Hello.
Hi, I have a question. I tend to like daylilies, and so I've been trying to plant some. In fact, I planted a few this morning that I got. And when I was looking, they list a lot of other lilies. They talk about Asiatic and Oriental and so forth. Now, they are not quite the same, I gather, as daylilies. And do they require a lot better soil and so forth than daylilies?
Yeah, they are completely different plant, even though they're also called lilies. And they're a bulb, for the most part, and is what you're going to find with those. And actually, pretty much the same things as what you might think with daylilies. Probably not quite as tolerant of things like wet soil. That would be the one thing on lilies, Asiatic lilies or Oriental lilies. They like a well-drained soil. But pretty much other than that, they certainly can take the same kind of thing. They would just as soon have full sun, that kind of thing, but although they take some shade. But magnificent plants. Everyone should have some lilies in there simply because they often, many of them will actually bloom in that kind of July-August period when a lot of the other perennials are sort of already done their thing or haven't done their thing yet. There's kind of that lag time where we don't have a whole lot of things going on, and that's where lilies come in.
How well do they survive from year to year, and and so forth?
Actually, very well. Again, if you the one thing that will take them out is poorly drained soil. They really don't like to sit, especially in the fall. If it's real wet, they'll just end up rotting. Yeah. But other than that, they really do very well. Certainly, some rabbits seem to like them. So if you have some rabbit problems, you may have to think about, you know, maybe using a repellent or fencing or something like that. So that would probably be the only other thing. But other than that, they're just magnificent. Some of them are really fragrant too, so it's wonderful. There's a really nice one called that I like called Casablanca, which is a wonderful, just pure white. It looks like it's made out of wax. It's just so perfectly white and very fragrant. Really nice one.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, we got somebody on a car phone here. Let's talk to them next. Line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a couple of questions. I realize it's not necessarily about trees, but we have some 25-year-old thornless, podless locusts
mm-hmm.
that are now turning into pods and thorns a little bit at a time. Is that unusual? Or?
They were sold to you as ones that were seedless? And
I beg your pardon?
They were sold to you as seedless ones?
No, we bought a house and they were there, and when we first moved there, it was fine, but then as we've been there 6 years, and now one tree is practically all full of pods and thorns, and it started out as not having them.
What if that was unusual?
Yeah.
I mean, normally it wouldn't be what you would see, because most of the time when they're, you know, if they've been purchased,
yeah.
they have a cultivar name, they're normally cloned, they're taken from cuttings, and so you're not generally going to see something that's going to sort of revert. The only thing I can think of is that if for some reason this was a graft, and sometimes they certainly would graft on. They might graft on to the more of the wilder, what you might think of as a honey locust, and if for some reason that graft did not take, and then the rootstock was allowed to grow, then you might actually see, you know, thorns and pods and stuff. But I don't know of anybody that's selling, you know, thorned honey locusts, because no one wants them.
I don't know what to do. I guess we'll just let them keep dropping their stuff.
I don't know if there's anything. There might be something you might be able to do about the pods. On some plants, we can actually spray them early in the season to sort of abort the flowers so you don't have pods. But I don't know if there's anything you can do about the thorns.
Well, the other question, we have several evergreens in the backyard. Are there any flowers you can plant under evergreens, or will they just be killed because of the shade and the pine stuff?
Yeah, actually, it depends. You're probably not going to be able to put them right smack dab underneath them, but certainly a little bit away from them. There's no reason why you can't go ahead and plant some things. And actually, even things like rhododendrons and azaleas and, you know, some of those actually look quite lovely, you know, next to evergreen. So you can do that. I'm not sure I'd put them right necessarily right smack dab underneath them. You could do some ground cover kinds of things maybe right underneath them, but you can certainly put them fairly close and with a little soil preparation. Those azaleas and rhododendrons do quite well, and they like that mulch, actually, that pine needle mulch.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's go to Rantoul for another person here. Line 2. Hello.
Hi. Say, I planted a butterfly bush last year in my small garden, and it had just a few small blooms on it. And now it's, you know, looks kind of dried out sitting there. Do I trim it back to get more blooms, or just let it go from here?
Yeah, you are going to have to trim it back, and usually you could go ahead and do that now. I usually just trim them back to maybe about 6 to 8 inches, because sometimes, depending on the weather, sometimes they'll actually go ahead and sprout buds even above the very root zone area, if that makes any sense. Sometimes, you know, if they've been somewhat protected, they'll actually go ahead and bud out, because they really are a woody plant. It's just we've kind of stretched them into an area where they're really not, the top part really isn't all that terribly hardy. So, but it is a good idea to go ahead and at least trim them down probably about 6 to 8 inches. And then
will that increase the chance of having more flowers?
Well, I think probably what you're going to see is sometimes it depends on the cultivar. Some of them are just a little bit more lankier than others. But as the plant grows and develops, you'll get bushier plant and you'll get a lot more flowers. It was just because it was a brand new plant.
Oh, okay.
You just weren't getting very many flowers.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. Well, the lines here are all clear. If there are folks who have questions, we got about 10 minutes left. Excuse me, with Sandy Mason from U of I Extension in Champaign County. And if you have questions about taking care of things in the home landscape, you can give us a call. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. And when I drive around, and particularly in Urbana, where I live, and I see a lot of what I guess what I would call daylilies, these old variety, the one that's been around for a long, long time that's orange. And we have some of them also kind of growing around our house, and they just don't really seem to bloom very well. I'm sure that they've been there for a long time. And I wonder, part of the problem I think might be that they don't get enough sun. But I also wonder, you know, is there something that I could be doing to see if then maybe I can get a few more flowers out of them?
Right. Well, probably, I mean, I think you're probably absolutely right. If they're not getting very much sun, they grow just fine, but they don't flower very well.
Yeah.
And that's probably what's happening. Right. But also those the older cultivars, the ones that maybe were associated with the farms and, you know, the ones that have been around forever, those actually weren't always the best ones for flowering anyway, to tell you the truth. They're really tried and true, and they certainly, you know, hang in there, and they're tough plants. So if you really want daylilies that are going to bloom, you might want to really think about some of the newer cultivars and you know, see some of the other ones. But I would, number one, I'd really think it's probably a problem with just not enough light. You could always divide them, you know, maybe, because sometimes that is another thing. If they've been there forever, maybe they really need some invigoration just by dividing them. So you might dig out a few of them and just see if you can sort of invigorate the patch a little bit, and might get better flowering that way.
Okay. Now we suddenly have lines are full. See, so I don't know if we'll try. We'll do see and get as many as we can. We'll start with Urbana, line one. Hello.
Good morning. Question is about apple trees that are probably 30 years old and bore very heavily from maybe the 10th to the 20th year, and have just quit bearing the last 5 or so years. What suggestions do you have?
Have they been pruned at all in all that time?
Occasionally.
Yeah. You know, sometimes they get so full of apple trees are really one of those that really need to be pruned every year. And you can be, you know, pretty brutal with them actually and do some pretty good pruning. But you're also getting, I don't know whether these are semi-dwarfs or whatever, but, you know, 30 years old, you really are getting sort of on the end of a lifespan, probably what we would consider probably of the semi-dwarfs and some of those.
Okay.
But if this is an older one, I would imagine probably what you could do, if it still seems like it's fairly healthy and all that, it really should need some pruning. You really need to get in there and prune out and cut back. And it might take, if it hasn't been pruned very much, it might take a couple years before you really get it back into shape. But you really, the old adage is you should be able to throw a football through an apple tree.
And it's not too late now still? Or is it?
Yeah, well, I would still do it, to tell you the truth. I wouldn't wait much longer. Normally, we would probably do this in February and March, but it's not too late at this point because we've had a cool season. So I would get out there and really start doing some pruning and really think about that. And I assume it still has a pollinator. Do you have more than one tree,
yeah,
I assume?
Yeah.
And so none of that has changed.
Right.
Yeah, the other thing, does it flower? Does it seem like it flowers?
Not terribly well.
Oh, okay. So I would do some pruning, because what I was going to ask, if it's flowering but not setting fruit, it might be actually a problem with pollinators. You know, we've lost a lot of our wild bee populations, and sometimes they just don't get pollinated very well.
Okay.
So if it's flowering but not fruiting, then that's probably a pollination problem.
Okay, let's go to line two. This is another Urbana person. Hello.
Hi, I'm calling about hydrangeas. I have several oak leaf and regular hydrangeas that were planted about a year ago, and I wondered what they need at this time of year.
Well, really, at this time of year, with as young as they are, I really wouldn't do too much of anything other than, you know, I don't know if they flowered last year, but I'd remove those old flower heads if you haven't done that yet. That's probably one thing, to sort of clean them up. But other than that, they really don't need a whole lot. If you want to invigorate some growth, you might go ahead and fertilize them. And they like a somewhat acidic soil, so you might use an acidifying type fertilizer. But for the most part, they really don't take too much.
Okay, and the old wood, cut it out or leave it? Or?
No, I would just leave it, because I don't know which, you know, the oak leaf as well as actually some of the other ones actually bloom on old wood.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, to Downs next, line four. Hello.
Hi. Sandy, a couple of times ago you were talking about deer, and you had a suggestion for something that you said you had been fairly successful with, spraying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You tell me what that was.
People are going to, yeah, okay. I've had very good luck with a product from Deer Busters.
Okay.
And you can order it online. And I have no stake in this company. I'm not their official spokesperson. I'm just sort of letting you know that this is what personally has worked well for me. They have a catalog. I don't know of any place locally you can get it, but you can get it online at deerbusters.com, or you can get their catalog, I'm sure. And a lot of the Horticulture Magazine, a lot of the magazines will have Deer Busters in the back. But the product that I get is, I think it's called Formula One, and it's a 3-month product. And I've just had really good success with it. I had such problems with rabbits. I mean, my annuals wouldn't last 24 hours. They were gone. And I'd plant them, they were gone within 24 hours. And I started spraying this stuff, and I saw virtually no damage.
Well, I keep seeing more and more and more.
The more
that I get. And deer are so destructive.
Yeah, the deer and rabbits both. And the thing I liked about this product is it seemed to last. There's lots of repellents out there, and unfortunately some of them you have to reapply every time it rains. But this one seemed to last.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. All right. Well,
I should be their official spokesperson.
Yeah,
I should be getting
get
a kickback or something out of this, huh?
Okay. Thanks for the call.
At least a free bottle of Deer Busters.
One more here. St. Joe, line 3. Hello.
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes. I had heard, and I believe that was from the WILL, that to get rid of Creeping Charlie, about the best thing was to pour on a solution of boric acid, 5 tablespoons for a gallon of warm water.
Mm-hmm.
And you did that in April and May, and then again September, October.
Mm-hmm.
And you pour that on while it is really growing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does the boric acid, my daughter has it terribly in her yard, does it harm anything else?
Well, and actually this isn't something really that the University of Illinois has really come out necessarily in favor of, but there's certainly a lot of people trying it. I've talked to some people that feel like that it's been fairly successful for them, and I've talked to other people that said that they felt like it hurt their lawn.
Oh.
So there may be some real problems here, depend on a couple things. I guess my theory on all of this is that you're actually using like the borax, the 20 mule team borax that you can still get in the laundry section, because that's really what you're using. And unfortunately, that stuff doesn't dissolve very well. And so what will happen is it sort of settles out. And I think what may be happening, maybe when people are applying it, they're not stirring it. You have to continually stir it to keep that stuff in suspension. Mm-hmm. And I think what may be happening is that if people don't do that, as they get to the end, they may find that last bit is probably maybe what's hurting their lawn. So this is something that's not really recommended by the University of Illinois, but it's something certainly that's out there, and if people want to try it, more than likely it's not going to hurt things.
Following directions.
Certainly follow directions, and I would just try it in a small spot. To be honest with you, I would just take a small spot. I've only seen this listed in lawn areas. I haven't seen this listed in if you've got it in your flower bed.
Well,
so we don't know what it does to things like daylilies and, columbine or anything else you might have out there. So realize this
really
is
bad in her raspberries.
Yeah.
Another thing she was wondering, would it hurt the earthworms? That was another thing.
Not, that part I'm not sure that there's going to be any problem, but certainly on, how it's going to affect other plants, we don't really know. So realize that this is something that people are just sort of trying. And again, I would highly recommend doing it in small spots and just try it and see how it works for you.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. And there's where we'll leave it for this time around, with the promise that Sandy will be back again next month. And in the meantime, if you're interested in gardening information, you can tune to the program Illinois Gardener on WILL-TV Thursday nights at 7. There's also an opportunity there to call in with questions. Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sandy Mason, horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County.